Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, bringing you an hour of crime. Later on, a story from Suspense from 1956, but right now it's the very popular crime show Big Town. Originally featuring actor Edward G. Robinson, this episode features Edward Pauly in the leading role from September 21, 1948 on NBC. The story called The Final Payment.
Big Town.
Extra, extra, hear all about The Final Payment. Steve Wilson's headline story, brought to you by Life Boy Health Soap. The soap that gets skin cleaner in your daily bath. Extra, extra.
Yes, Life Boy Health Soap presents Big Town. The headline stories of a great city, dramatically reported by Steve Wilson, fighting managing editor, whose creed, as with all great newsmen, is emblazoned on the masthead of the Illustrated Press.
The power and the freedom of the press is a flaming sword. That it may be a servant of all the people, use it justly, hold it high, and guard it well.
Now, Big Town, and tonight's story of a vicious racket of modern ghouls, trading on tragedy and sorrow. The Final Payment. No sensational headline yarn for Steve Wilson and his Illustrated Press. This story of a vicious, widespread, but little publicized racket began in a cheap rooming house headquarters of Malcolm Todd and his embittered, red-headed accomplice, Ginger. Began one evening not long ago.
Well, so you got back, Ginger. Congratulations.
Lay off the sarcasm, Mel. I've covered every pawn shop in this section of Big Town and my feet hurt.
How many watches did you get?
About a dozen, but I had to pay $5 for some of them.
Okay, okay. We'll still make a slick profit once I get the initials of today's crop of deadens cut on the back.
Look, Mal, I'm getting sick of this peanut racket. Rooking the relatives of a lot of dopes that ain't even been buried yet.
I told you, it's just till we get a stake, get organized, and go big time. Line up a mob, work with a real racket.
Yeah, that's what you said in Chicago 6 months ago. But things got hot and we had to beat it. And the same thing happened in Cleveland.
Well, it ain't gonna happen in Big Town. We're gonna make a killing as soon as we can line up with a real racket.
So why don't we get right into some racket that pays off in something more than three squares and bus fare to the next town when the local flats start breathing down our
heads? I keep telling you, Ginger, it's only till we can hook up with some local mob that's got connections and protection. Now quit beeping and pack up them watches.
Yeah, sure. We gotta catch the widows and relatives and collect for the handsomely initialed watches. Well, I'm sick of it. Fed up.
Oh, shut up and get to work. That kind of attitude ain't going to get you diamonds and mink coats.
At the rate we're going, I'll end up with one of these two-buck watches.
What?
I'm sick of you and your schemes. I'm fed up.
Don't start throwing things, baby. Listen to me.
Matt, you hurt my arm. Let go. I'm pulling out.
Oh, no, you're not. Hold still, baby, and listen.
They hurt my throat. Let go.
Shut up and listen. I want to show you something. Something you don't ever want to forget.
Matt, what are you doing with that gun? You promised you'd quit carrying a gun after what happened in L.A., that cop.
Forget that cop. You're liable to find out if you try pulling out on me.
I was only kidding, Mel, honestly.
Don't ever try it, baby.
Mel, let go of my throat. I won't.
All right. Don't ever try to pull out and cross me up with another guy or I'll blast you both.
I won't, Mel. I won't.
Well, good. Now go wash the mascara off your face and go out and get the early edition of the Illustrated Press.
The Illustrated Press?
Yeah, it's the top sheet in this town. They have the best obituary column, the best list of suckers. Now get going, honey. The dead don't like to be kept waiting.
Hello, Steve. You got a minute to spare?
Hello, Lola. It could be. What's furrowing your lovely brow this beautiful afternoon?
I think I've dug up the meanest racket in the world.
Well, which one? There are several running neck and neck for that title.
Ever hear of poor box looters and those who steal pennies off the eyes of the dead?
Oh, yes, among others.
Well, this racket puts those human benefactors in the shade.
Okay, let's have it, Laura.
There are a couple of modern grave robbers working a post-mortem delivery of junky watches on the relatives of people who have just died.
Uh-oh, the old obituary records.
Right. They get their list of prospects from the obituary columns of the newspapers.
Yes, Lorelei. In one form or another, it's been going on for years. The crooks deliver cars, jewelry, portraits. usually worthless junk, they claim the deceased member of the family ordered before he died.
This time, it's cheap watches with initials carved on the backs. Price $20 in the case I ran into.
How'd you pick up the lead? Police headquarters?
No, I was over in the factory district getting the story on a man who was killed in a hit-and-run accident. The man's wife told me the story and showed me the watch.
Had she reported the matter to the police?
No, she said she was sure her husband never ordered the watch, but the man who delivered it threatened to sue, so she gave him the money.
Yes, they generally pay without question or protest.
Oh, Steve, it was awful the way she sat holding that cheap watch, her fingers touching the initials cut in the back. Knowing she'd been cheated, feeling so helpless, and yet accepting it as part of the greater tragedy that had come to her.
Well, these petty crooks know it's easy to work their dirty racket on the people in the depths of misery and despair.
And because they don't rate front page headlines, nobody bothers. Nobody cares to read about it.
You're wrong, Lorelei. Millions suffer from the petty rackets. The very ones who can least afford to lose the little they have. Besides, this type of filthy gyp is a training school for the big time rackets.
Is there anything we can do about this one, Steve?
Yes, did you get any lead? A good description of the man who delivered the watch?
No. The poor woman was so upset she couldn't recall what he looked like. She thought he was tall and dark complexion.
Well, I'm afraid that's no help.
It'd be like looking for a needle in a haystack, even if we followed up on every obituary notice in the press.
Yes, that's the... Hold it. Huh? Lorelei, you've given me an idea. How would you like to be a widow?
Hey, not so fast, Steve. You might at least find me a suitable husband before you make me a widow.
Well, for this job, we can skip the formality. Here, find yourself a furnished apartment in the want ad section.
Hey, what have I talked myself into?
A handsomely initialed watch, ordered by your late husband, I hope.
Oh, light begins to dawn. I'm the come-on.
Yes, pick a moderate price furnished apartment in the factory district and get over there and rent it before it's taken.
Here's one at 20 Pine Street.
Pick a name, Lorelei. Smith? Brown? Jones?
I'll take Jones. Lorelei Jones.
Hello, Mac. Steve Wilson.
Oh, Mr. Wilson, what can I do for you?
I want you to insert a death notice, Mac.
Hey, Mr. Wilson, sorry. Friend, relative of yours?
No, an imaginary character called Jones. Henry Jones, Mac. We're baiting a trap for a modern gravedigger.
Robber. Catch. Henry Jones.
Survived by his wife, Lorelei Jones.
Lorelei? You mean our Lorelei?
Check. It's all very sudden, Mac.
Anything else?
Have the notice set up, but hold it until Lorelei's rented an apartment and phones in the address.
It's as good as done, Mr. Wilson.
Thanks, Mac.
Do I dress the part, Steve?
No, you'll do as you are, but hide that 20-buck hat.
On my salary? Oh, I made it myself.
I'll hide it anyway, and on your way to your new address, you better stop at your place and pack an overnight bag, Lorelei.
Okay.
And when you get a flat, phone Mac, the obit, and give him the address.
Right. Well, how long do you think it'll be before this slimy character appears?
Well, if he sees the obit and takes the bait at all, he'll show up sometime tomorrow morning.
What do I do, call for the law?
No, Lorelei, these rats can be as mean and vicious as their racket. Just tell him you want whatever your late husband ordered, but you're having the money.
Mm-hmm.
Say you'll have to get it from your brother and ask him to come back in an hour.
Then what?
Well, then phone me here at the office and I'll be right over.
Okay, brother.
Right, and I'll be there when he comes back.
Can I kick him just once when you grab him?
Nothing doing, Lorelei. Like four-legged rats, the obit operators seldom hunt their victims alone. We want all of them before we spring the trap.
Hello. Hello, Illustrated Press. Steve Wilson, please. Lorelei Kilburn calling.
Hello, Steve Wilson.
Oh, hello, Steve. It's Lorelei.
Have the chisel shown up yet?
No, and it's 3 o'clock. The death notice has been out almost 24 hours. I'm afraid we've drawn a blank.
Well, stick it a few more hours, Lorelei. It takes these racketeers time to mark initials on their junk, and they may have other deliveries to make.
All right, Steve, but I'd hate to spend another night in this place.
What's the matter, my lovely?
Rats. Four-legged.
Say, where are you phoning from, the hall?
No, the apartment. The former occupant had a phone, and it hasn't been disconnected.
Well, that's a break. Call me back if and after our man shows.
All right, I will. And incidentally, don't you trust me, Steve?
What do you mean, Lorelei?
There's been a man sitting on a stool in a bar and grill across the street watching this house all day.
Probably a barfly student of human nature.
Mm-hmm. His name couldn't be Harry the Hack, unofficial chauffeur and bodyguard of the Illustrated Press staff,
you're
could
very
it, Steve?
Very observant, Lorelei. You're also a very good reporter, and I'm not taking any chances.
Thanks, Steve, but hold it. I've got to call her.
Okay, hang up. Go on your act and make it good. The man we're after, do just as I told you, and don't write yourself an obituary.
Right, Steve, I'll play it straight, and I'll call you back as soon as he leaves. Yes. Yes, just a moment, please. Who is it?
Package for Mr. Henry Jones.
Oh, a package? Just a minute, please.
Good afternoon. Mr. Jones in?
Well, Henry, my husband died only yesterday.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, ma'am.
Yes, it was very sudden.
Well, maybe that's the best way to go, ma'am. But now about this package.
Oh, yes, you said you had a package for Henry. I'll take it.
Fine. I guess you'll want it to remember him by. The watch he ordered.
A watch?
Yeah. We'd have been able to deliver it sooner, but he wanted his initials on it. There's a COD charge for
$20. $20?
Yeah, 20.
But Henry didn't tell me anything about ordering a watch.
Maybe he was going to surprise you.
Well, maybe, but could I see it?
Sure. Here you are. But I can't leave it without the $20, lady.
Oh, I understand. Doesn't look like a very good watch.
I don't know anything about that, lady. All I know is your husband ordered it. Had us put his initials on it. And that spoils it for anybody else. So we have to collect the $20.
But I don't have $20 in the house. You see, there have been so many expenses.
How soon can you get it?
Well, I'm expecting my brother. I guess I could get it from him. Could you come back in an hour?
I don't know. I've got a couple of more deliveries to make.
Well, could I come to your shop and pick it up this evening?
No, no. I'll be back in an hour. If I can't make it, I'll send one of my assistants.
All right. You come back, and I'll have the money ready for you.
Good. You do that, and we won't have to turn the matter over to our collection agency. So long, Mrs. Jones. See you later.
I'll see you, will you? Come of the earth.
Lorelei. Lorelei.
Steve, come in. What kept you? It's almost time for that human leech to come back.
Oh, I stopped across the street to tell Harry to be in his hack and ready to roll.
Oh, good. How are we going to handle this big rat when he shows?
Well, just how big is he?
Yeah, he can spot you 4 inches and 20 pounds, but I'm not sure he'll be back in person.
Well, I hope you didn't scare him off.
He isn't the type that scares easy when there's cash in prospect. But I think he may send an assistant.
Well, it doesn't matter. The assistant will lead us to their headquarters, Lila.
Well, what'll I say this time?
Now, when the bell rings, you're going to be grief-stricken. I'll handle this.
Okay, Brother Steve, the pleasure is all yours. Last time it made me sick to my stomach listening to that leech pull his rotten routine.
Okay, Lila, I go in the other room and leave this to me. I'm going to try an act of my own.
Well, restrain your impulse to smash his face in.
I'll try to do that, Lila.
Oh, good afternoon. Well, hello, Red.
Well, hello, big boy.
Sorry, I'm afraid you have the wrong apartment, sister.
I don't think so. Mrs. Henry Jones lives here, don't she?
Why, yes.
You must be the brother she was going to borrow $20 from that left the COD on this watch her husband ordered before he died.
Oh, yes. I got the money for you. Right here.
Thanks. Hope you don't mind if I count it, handsome.
Not at all. But I want to have a talk with you, Red.
What about?
About your boss.
How come?
I might have something that would interest him.
Oh, yeah? Just a minute, my boss don't like to get shortchanged.
Oh, smart boss.
Nice fresh bills right out of the mint.
That's right. Now, if you give me the watch, I'll give it to my sister. She's lying down. It's been pretty much of a shock.
Yeah. She's lucky having a smooth guy like you around. Must be quite a comfort.
Oh, thanks for the compliment, but what happened to your boss? I thought he was coming back.
He had some deliveries to make across town. And am I glad. You wouldn't be going my way, would you?
Could be, Red. Well, I got to talk to my sister first. How about waiting for me downstairs?
I got a better idea. I'll wait for you in the bar and grill across the street. The name's Ginger.
Okay, Ginger. See you in a few minutes.
Don't keep me waiting, brother.
Don't worry. I won't.
Well, handsome, you certainly did all right on short notice.
Now, don't jump to conclusions, my lovely.
You don't have to jump at those kinds of conclusions. They just run you down.
Okay, okay, but this changes our plan of action, Marlene.
Obviously. What assignment have you thought of to get rid of me?
Now, don't tell me you're jealous.
Don't flatter yourself, brother. Oh, okay, Steve, seriously, what was the purpose in that quick play-up to that curvaceous cutie with a four-alarm tress?
I think I can persuade her to lead me right to her boss, Laura.
What do I do while she's doing that?
I want you to get out of here, get in Harry's hack, and follow us wherever we go when we leave that bar and grill.
So far, easy.
And when I give you the high sign, I want you to go to the nearest police station and tell them what's up.
And invite them to a handcuff party?
Yes.
on the double.
Okay, big boy, what's your name?
Steve. Steve Wilson.
What's your racket, Steve?
I haven't a racket of my own, Ginger.
Oh, don't give me that, Steve. You got dough and you got brains, so you gotta have a racket.
Oh, I work for a big organization.
Oh, I get it. A big time mob.
Well, I wouldn't care to have it called a mob. But what about this boyfriend of yours?
He ain't my boyfriend. I've just been stringing along, getting nothing but promises. From where I sit, it looks like he ain't never going to get nowhere.
Yeah, there ain't much future in selling junky watches, even if he puts initials on $2 tickers and CODs them for $20.
Hey, you're wise to the racket.
Oh, sure. I cut my eye teeth on it.
Well, then how come you give me the $20 without a squawk?
Because I want to meet your boss.
What for?
Well, maybe I'll put him in line for something big.
How do I know you're on the level?
I'm not on the level. How about taking me to meet your boss?
He'd beat my ears off if I brought you to the joint we're using as headquarters while we're working big time.
I thought you said he wasn't your boyfriend.
He ain't, but he's crazy jealous. And if he thought I was interested in another fella, there's no telling what he's liable to do.
Oh, okay. There's nothing to keep me from following you home, is there?
No. No, there ain't. You look like you could take care of yourself. But if you do, you better watch out for Mal.
What last name is he using this season?
Mal Todd, and you watch out. He carries a rod in his suitcase, and I happen to know he's used it more than once.
Oh, thanks for the tip, Ginger. I think Todd will listen to my proposition.
He wants to tie up with some local mob that's got organization and protection. Maybe he'll listen. But, you got a rod just in case he won't?
I never carry a gun.
Gee, then you are a big shot, Steve. Where's your bodyguard?
Outside. A taxi parked down the street.
Gee, fancy me bumping into a guy like you. Am I lucky?
Well, on the other hand, I might be a plainclothes cop.
Nah, you ain't the type.
Okay, well, now that we understand each other, suppose you finish your drink and go to Todd's place.
Okay. And you're gonna trail along?
Like your shadow.
Okay. And Steve?
Yeah, Ginger?
In case you should find Mal Todd don't want to play along with you, it won't break my heart if you have to rub him out.
You, Ginger?
Yeah, Mal. Let me in quick.
What's lathering you?
Close the door. Lock it.
Okay. It's locked. What's the matter? What kept you?
A guy's following me.
Guys are always following you.
It's the brother of the dame we hooked.
That Mrs. Jones?
Yeah.
So what? Did you get the $20?
Yeah, he gave it to me.
Okay, hand it over.
Well, can't I keep a fiver?
I'll give you a couple bucks tomorrow. What about this guy? Did he squawk?
No. He bought me a drink and tried to get the lowdown on you.
On me? Copper, maybe.
No, I can whip a cop a mile. He talks like he's got some kind of racket. Wants to talk to you.
What about?
I don't know. He wouldn't tell me.
Listen, you two-timing little twist, if this is a double cross.
Man, you're hurting my arm.
Sometimes I think I ought to break your neck. What'd you tell this local wiseacre?
Nothing, Mal, honest. And I tried to shake him, but I couldn't. He followed me all the way here.
Oh, he did he? Okay. If he wants to talk, we'll see what he's got to say.
Mal, you hadn't ought to carry that gun on you. Real big shots hardly ever carry guns.
This is one of them hardly ever times, Sugarpuss.
Mal.
Huh?
I think he's out in the hall.
Okay, let's see what he wants. Good evening, brother.
Hello, Todd.
You mind if I come in?
No. Come in.
Come on in, fella. I've been hearing about you.
Thanks.
I hope I'm not interrupting anything unimportant.
And put away that gun.
Never mind the gun. Don't forget I got it, smart guy. Sit down. Make yourself comfortable.
No, thanks. Looks like the chairs are falling apart.
Suit yourself. Ginger tells me you've been pumping her about our little Obet record.
Oh, nice going, Ginger. I thought you weren't going to tell your pal Todd. We had a little talk.
That's what I wanted you to think.
Ginger would double-cross her own grandmother, but she knows better than to pull a fast one on me.
Well, that must be a comforting thought while it lasts.
Okay, wise guy. What do you want?
I want to size you up before I make you a proposition, Todd.
What's the name?
The name's Wilson.
Steve Wilson.
What's the proposition?
It's a proposition that'll save you wearing out shoe leather trying to make a living by rooking grief-stricken relatives out of their hard-earned cash, paying for junk watches no one ordered.
Okay. If your wife's the racket, how come you forked over this 20 bucks?
Because I expect to get it back.
With interest.
Yeah?
Frisk this monkey, Ginger. Let's see if we can place him from what he's got on him.
You won't find a gun.
He said he never carried no gun, Mal. He's clean.
Yes, remember what else I told you, Ginger?
Yeah. Mal, you better go easy. He acts like a big-timer, and he's got a bodyguard that trailed us all the way here.
Yeah, why don't you tell me that?
Well, I forgot.
What else you forget? What is this, a frame?
I'm just looking after myself, that's all.
Oh, Ginger wouldn't double-cross you, Todd. You just finished saying so.
She won't do it but once. Come on, Ginger, give out. What's the angles on this screwy setup?
I don't know, and I don't much care. Would I ever get out of stringing along with a small-time punk like you?
More than you ever got out of that five-a-day routine in that tank town burlesque.
In a pig's eye. Anyway, I wasn't always ducking cops, getting the bum's rush from the local hoods. I'm fed up. I've had enough, and I'm getting out while the getting's good.
You better stick around, Ginger. Maybe Todd and I can make a deal and go places.
Like nothing. I thought maybe you was somebody, but you let this tin horn push you around like he was a pig shot.
Stay put, Ginger. You ain't taking a powder on me for this guy or anybody else.
Like nothing, I ain't. I know when I've had enough.
Don't unlock that door, Ginger. I told you you'd never walk out on me.
I heard you say it plenty of times.
I meant it then, and I'm telling you now.
Now, don't be a fool, Todd. The chair's the payoff for trigger play.
Shut up, Wilson. Come back here, sugar puss, or so help me, I'll let you have it.
Don't tempt him, Red.
He ain't got the nerve. So long, small Todd.
Go on, you two-timing little tramp.
Duck, Ginger!
I'll kill her! I'll kill her!
Not shooting into the ceiling, you won't! Okay, Todd. Sleep that one off. Are you all right, Red?
Yeah, he missed me, and you're okay. I thought you was just another four-flusher, but you're okay, and you and me can really go places.
Sorry, Ginger. Your cross and double-cross has left you right where you started. Long ago.
The cops. And you're one of them.
No, no, Ginger. Just a newspaper man who doesn't like to see a lot of poor and distressed people being pushed around.
Steve, you all right? I heard a couple of shots.
Right as rain, Lorelei. Tell the law to come in and collect a couple of practitioners of one of the meanest rackets on the book.
Well, they just pulled up outside. Well, how did you manage this, Steve?
I suppose this Dave is that bodyguard you was talking about.
Uh-huh. But we're thinking of getting him a keeper any day now.
Okay, Lorelei, spare the rib. Get on the phone. Get this story to Fletch on the final.
Right, Steve. The capture of this pair should help break up the obituary racket in Big Town.
Yes, Lorelei, and serve as a warning to other migratory leeches preying on the helpless and the distressed.
So ended another skirmish in the endless battle of the war on crime. Another win in the career of fighting Steve Wilson and his staff of the Illustrated Press. Now, before telling you about next week's dramatic Big Town story, here is Lorelei Kilbourn.
Friends, this is Lorelei Kilbourn. I'd just like to say how nice it is to be back in these big town adventures. And it's especially nice to be working for such a fine sponsor as Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lifebuoy Health Soap. Like millions of other Americans, I've been a Lifebuoy fan for years. I like the lather. I like the mildness. I've seen the proof of its quality and its wonderful effects. I know you'll like Lifebuoy, too. And we're all looking forward to next Tuesday night and many Tuesday nights to come. Thank you for welcoming us into your home. Thank you, and good night.
Next week, the makers of Lifebuoy bring you The Trap, a hard-hitting story of a dead man's revenge on his enemies. Another exciting assignment in the newspaper career of fighting Steve Wilson of Big Town. Don't miss it. In tonight's dramatization, all names, times, and places are fictional, and any similarity to other names and places is purely coincidental. Big Town features Edward Pauley as Steve Wilson, Fran Carlin as Lorelei Kilbourn, and was written and directed by Jerry McGill. And now, Big Town bids you good night until next Tuesday night, same time, same station, when you'll hear the newsboy calling...
Extra, extra, hear all about it. The story of Steve Wilson and Big Town brought to you by Lifebuoy Health Soap, another fine Lever product.
Big Town, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode heard on September 21st, 1948 on NBC. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to Suspense from June 5th, 1956 on CBS, the program on the air for about 14 years at that point, drawing about 3 million listeners a week, Tuesday nights at 8:30. A cast including former Lux Radio Theater director Fred MacKay, star in the story The 12th Rose.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a story of death and 11 roses. We call it The 12th Rose. So now, starring Paula Winslow, here is tonight's suspense play, The 12th Rose.
Miss Robbins. I got some clean towels for...
The place, New York City. The time, 12:15 p.m. Dolores Robbins had been young and pretty. The details of her murder were not. The sprawled position of her body and the instrument of murder indicated that the act had not been premeditated. A dozen roses were in the apartment, 11 of them in a large vase near the body. Running around and up the length of each stem to give the blossom support was a single strand of green wire. The killer had circled the girl's neck with a long stem of the 12th rose and then twisted. And although the stem itself had broken, the wire had not. 55 minutes after the maid discovered the girl's body, two detectives from the homicide division began questioning her.
Mrs. Williams, how often did you clean in here?
Every day but Sunday. She wasn't due for service but twice a week, but she always gave me a little something extra.
Then you were in here yesterday?
Yes, sir. Yesterday afternoon.
Were these roses here then?
No, sir.
You're sure?
Yes, sir.
Do you have any idea where they might have come from?
No, sir. But no girl looking like she looked is going to have to buy them for herself.
And what about the box or wrapping paper they came in? Do you know where it might be?
Well, if Miss Robbins threw it in the trash before 8 this morning, it'd already be burned up. If she put it in after 8...
She didn't. She was killed late last night.
Oh.
Mrs. Williams, did you ever see her boyfriend?
Well, she didn't have a regular boyfriend.
But she went out once in a while, didn't she?
Yeah, I suppose she did.
Was she here when you came in to clean yesterday?
Yes, sir.
Did she say anything about having a date last night?
No, sir. Not to me, but...
Yes? Go on.
Well, I was just about through when she got this phone call. She'd been washing her hair and I was finishing up dusting. And I heard her say she'd met a real nice man and thought she might see him that night.
Did she mention his name?
I don't think so. At least not while I was here. I finished up and left before she got off the phone.
Well, you know who she was talking to?
Yes, sir. Miss Butler. She and Miss Robbins were real good friends. If you want to talk to her, she lives in the building next door.
Mildred Butler confirmed the maid's statements. She remembered the telephone conversation that she had had with the Robbins girl. She remembered the victim telling her about a man she had met the night before. Miss Robbins had not said where or under what circumstances they had met, but she had indicated that she would see him later that evening. When asked if she'd been told the man's name, the butler girl replied that she had. It was Carl Owens. The two detectives returned to the victim's apartment.
Pete, you ever buy roses for your wife?
Two girls in high school?
Are you kidding? You know anything about them?
Sure. Some were red and some were yellow.
When I was a kid, Pete, my folks had a greenhouse. They used to raise them, all kinds. These are just average.
How can you tell?
Well, look at the stems. They're wired to keep them from drooping. Now, a good rose, you don't have to wire the stems. They'll stand up straight for days.
Well, What do you call these, you know?
Yeah, happiness.
What are you, a detective? You really think we got a chance of getting them, Lou?
If we're lucky, and if Owens is his right name.
Lab boys didn't find any good prints.
We might not need them.
Huh?
We'll just locate every Carl Owens between 20 and 40 who works or lives here in this area. Some of them will be eliminated automatically. Those that aren't, we'll consider possible suspects. And then, Pete, if we're still lucky, we'll get someone to identify the killer.
Yeah, but nobody saw him.
Oh, you're wrong, Pete. Somebody did.
Yeah? Who?
The florist that sold him these roses.
Suppose the florist doesn't remember.
Well, the way the papers are going to play this one up, he'll remember.
There's just one thing.
Yeah?
Suppose the killer is thinking like we are.
How do you mean?
Suppose the killer remembers the florist.
At 9:33 that evening, Miss Helen Craig, the manager of a small flower shop on the east side, adjusted the thermostat on the refrigerated display case. A moment later, her employee, Nancy Wassel, crossed to the front windows and pulled the shades. The shop was closed for the night.
Oh, thank goodness. I didn't think the day would ever end.
Want me to bring some iced tea tomorrow?
Well, if you like. We can keep it cool in the display case. Oh, and Nancy?
Yes?
Stop off at the wholesaler's in the morning and pick up 3 dozen long-stemmed roses.
Any particular kind?
You'd better get happiness. I sold the last of them while you were out yesterday.
Is that all we need?
Until Monday. You can tell Mr. Leeds. I'll see him then.
Oh, that must be Joe. My seamstress?
Well, let's see. Yes, fine.
You don't mind if I leave?
No, run along. I'll wait for Max to check in.
Thanks, Miss Craig. Night.
Good night. You gave me a fright. I didn't hear you come in.
You had your head in that showcase.
Why, aren't you the gentleman I waited on yesterday afternoon? That selected the roses?
Oh, you do remember me then?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
I wasn't sure you would.
Oh? Well, it'd be hard to forget it.
Yes? Go on.
Well, you're tall and... oh, please. Now you're embarrassing me.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. You all alone here?
Why, yes. I was just getting ready to leave. Why?
Just curious. Were you going right home? Or was someone coming to meet you here?
Well, really, Mr...
Johnson. Bill Johnson, Miss Craig.
Oh, you know my name? Well, how does that happen?
It was printed on the receipt you gave me. Helen Craig, manager. You're too attractive to be a manager.
Oh, please.
No, really. I think you are.
Now, Mr. Johnson... It's taken me a good many years to get used to this face. And now that I am, I resent anyone insulting my intelligence by trying to flatter me.
Oh, you've got a temper, too.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. I like a woman to have a little fight in her. Makes her much more interesting.
Oh? And how often do you fight? Oh, dear. Excuse me.
What is it?
The delivery man. I have to let him in.
Miss Craig.
Yes?
I suppose you know by now I didn't come here to buy flowers.
Oh?
I just stopped by to deliver a message from my mother.
Your
mother? Yes. She wanted you to know how much she liked the roses.
Oh, well, now I am flattered. But I thought...
Yes? What did you think?
Well, when a gentleman buys roses, they're usually for a young lady.
The only girl I've got's my mother. She's in the hospital. That's where the roses went. Well, I've got to go.
Oh, please stop in again, Mr. Johnson.
That's a promise, Miss Craig. I'll see you real soon.
At 4 o'clock the next morning, a milkman left a quart bottle just outside the door of the apartment that Helen Craig shared with her younger sister, Peggy. 3.5 hours later, Helen opened the door, letting Napoleon, the cat, into the kitchen. At the same time, she picked up the quart of milk. She didn't notice that someone had tampered with the protective cap on the bottle. Not even when she poured some of the milk into a dish for the cat.
There,
There you are, Nappy boy.
Hi.
Well, what got you up so early on a Saturday, Peg?
I decided to go to the beach for the weekend.
Oh? You didn't say anything about it last night.
I had made up my mind. Besides, I was asleep long before you got to bed.
Well, sit down. I'll pour the coffee. How are you going?
On the train. I've got to hurry. It leaves at 8:15.
Now, Nappy, be quiet and drink your milk. Who are you going with, Peg?
Betty Mills and another girl from the office. They've rented a cottage for their vacation. I'll be home late Sunday. Hey.
Well, what's the matter?
You. What have you done to yourself?
Oh, well, nothing much. I just used a little rinse on my hair and sort of combed it over on the side.
Oh, that's what you were doing last night.
It looks awful, doesn't it?
Oh, no. I like it, Helen, really. Who is he?
Who do you mean?
You know who I mean. The man you've met. The one that's fixing up bits for. What's his name? How'd you meet him?
Well, his name is Johnson. He came into the shop for the first time day before yesterday to buy some roses. And then last night he came back to tell me how much his mother liked them.
Oh, that's a likely story. When are you going to see him again?
Well, I don't know for sure, but when he left last night, he said it would be soon.
Oh, I hope. Napoleon, for heaven's... Oh, and something's wrong with him.
What? Nappy!
He's sick.
Well, he was all right a minute ago.
Well, he's not now. I'll look at him.
Oh, get a blanket, Peg, and call a cab. I'll take him to the vet's.
Craig?
Oh, yes?
Thank you for waiting. I'm Dr. Michaels.
Oh, yes, Doctor. How is Nap, my cat?
Well, I'm afraid I have bad news for you, Miss Craig. She's dead.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. You see, there was very little we could do.
Oh, but what caused it?
Well, now, we can't be sure without a laboratory examination, so
well,
I
what
would...
do you think it was?
Poison, Miss Craig. I think someone may have poisoned him.
By checking through the Records Bureau, DMV, various credit bureaus, state employment agencies, and finally by referring to the Manhattan telephone directory, Detectives Clymore and Carver located over 40 men with the name of Carl Owens. Of this number, 9 could be classified as suspects in the murder of Dolores Robbins. They did not contact these men directly, but they did make some discreet inquiries. Their next step, locate the florist who had sold one of them the roses found in the dead girl's apartment. Time, 9:20. Helen Craig arrived at the flower shop.
Miss Craig, have you seen the papers? Did you read about it?
About what, Nancy?
The rose murder.
The what?
Well, the girl that was choked to death with the happiness rose. The murderer bought some roses for this girl day before yesterday, and when she took him to her apartment, he choked her to death. Isn't it the most exciting thing you've heard?
Oh, please, Nancy, I'm not in the mood.
But he could have bought those roses here.
I'm sure he didn't.
Well, how do you know? Didn't you sell a dozen of those roses while I was out that afternoon?
Yes.
To a man?
Yes, to a man.
Well?
Before you let your imagination run away with you, I happen to know he bought them for his mother.
Oh.
Has anyone called me this morning?
Only Max. He'll be a few minutes late. Something wrong with the truck. Oh, and I got the roses. They're in the display case.
Oh, thank you. I'll be out to wire them in a minute.
The roses the murderer bought were wired. Does everyone wire the stems the same way?
Nancy, please. I'm depressed enough without having to listen to a second-hand account of a cheap murder.
I'm sorry. I just thought you'd be interested.
Well, I'm not. And if you haven't anything to do back here, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave me alone.
Miss Craig, what is it?
Well, I... Oh, dear, this is silly of me. You remember our cat, Napoleon?
Yes.
Well, he's dead. The vet thinks somebody poisoned him.
Oh, no.
Of course, he's not sure yet, but if he was poisoned, I'm going to find the person that gave it to him. He'll wish he hadn't.
I'll get it. Madison Flower Shop. Yes, she is. Would you like to speak? Hello? Hello? That's funny.
Wrong number?
No. He asked if you were here, and I told him you were. He hung up.
Carl Owens had arrived at his office in the Chemical Industries warehouse at 9:30 that morning. He was rather pleased with himself. He had encountered no difficulty in putting a certain tasteless poison in the Craig woman's milk bottle. He knew now, after making the phone call, that she had not touched the milk. But she would, in time. And he was sure he had plenty of time.
Mr. Owens.
Carl, what have you been up to?
What? Who is this?
Janet, honey, and personnel.
Oh, Jan.
Mr. Hall received a phone call from somebody a few minutes ago, and whoever it was sure asked a lot of questions about you.
Oh? Like what?
Well, I couldn't hear everything Mr. Hall said, but I did hear him give out your address.
My address?
Mm-hmm. What'd you do, honey? Apply for credit somewhere? Carl?
Oh, yeah, I was going to get something on time, but I've changed my mind.
Time, 2:20 p.m. Nancy Wassel returned from lunch.
Relax, Miss Craig. It's just me. Anything happen?
Oh, Mrs. Williams called. She wants a centerpiece of stock and carnations for tonight. Oh, I'll get it, Nancy. Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Say, these roses here in the case, the ones with their stems wired, they're called happiness, aren't they?
Yes, that's right.
Very nice. And these here are marguerites, huh? I haven't seen any of those in several years.
Well, would you care to...
No, I'm here on business. My name's Carver, police. Here's my identification.
Oh, yes, Lieutenant.
Is there anyone else working here who sells the flowers?
Only my assistant, Miss Wassel.
Would you call her, please?
Why, surely. Oh, Nancy, would you come out here, please?
Coming.
This won't take very long, Miss. Just a couple of questions.
Nancy, this is Lieutenant Carver from the police.
Good afternoon.
Oh, I'll bet you hear about that murder.
Yes, that's right.
I read about it in the papers.
She's done a good job of filling me in on the gory details, Lieutenant.
Good. That saves us both time. Now, do either of you remember selling a dozen of the happiness roses to a man day before yesterday, probably in the afternoon?
I didn't sell any that day, but Miss Craig did.
Oh? Do you have a record of that transaction, Miss Craig?
Well, I know it was cash.
Could you identify the man if necessary?
Yes, but I know he isn't the one you're looking for.
What makes you so certain? Is he a regular customer?
Well, no, he's not.
Well, does he have an account here?
No.
Do you happen to know his address?
Well, no, but those roses were for his mother. She's in the hospital.
I see. You had them delivered, I suppose?
No, Mr. Johnson took them himself.
Johnson?
Yes, that's his name, Bill Johnson.
Well, that ends that. For a minute there, I thought we had something. No one else bought any that afternoon.
No.
Now, be very sure. Your life may depend on it.
Why do you say that, Lieutenant?
I don't want to frighten you, miss, but the florist that sold those roses is the only person that could identify the killer.
Oh, and with the florist out of the way...
Well, I won't take up any more of your time. Thank you for your cooperation.
You're quite welcome.
Miss Craig?
Yes?
May I buy one of those happiness roses?
Oh, well, you can't buy it, Lieutenant. But I'd be very glad to let you have one.
Thank you very much.
When you have time, stop in again, Lieutenant.
I'd like to. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, what a charming gentleman. Oh, I'll get it.
You didn't tell me you knew the man that bought those roses.
I don't tell you everything, Nancy. Madison Flower Shop.
Miss Craig, please.
Speaking.
Oh, Dr. Michaels, Miss Craig. I had the laboratory report on your cat.
Oh, yes, doctor.
He was definitely poisoned.
Oh, I see. Do you know how the poison was given to him?
Yes, it was in milk.
What?
It was given to him in milk.
Oh, but that's impossible. I gave him his milk this morning.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. It was a fresh bottle. I brought it in from the hall and poured some of it into his dish.
Did you drink any of it yourself? Miss Craig?
No.
Well, if there is poison in that milk, I...
I know, Doctor. If there is, it wasn't meant for Napoleon.
Time, 6 p.m. Nancy Wassel crossed to the front windows and pulled the shades. The shop was closed for the night. 45 minutes later, Helen Craig was alone in the shop. She turned off the lights in the sales room and went into her small office where she began checking over accounts payable.
Let's see, Williams, here it is. $42.20. Yes? Is someone out there? Who is it? Who is it?
Good evening, Miss Craig.
Oh! Who is it?
It's only me, Miss Craig. Bill Johnson.
Oh, Mr. Johnson. Oh, you gave me such a fright. Oh, wait. Wait, I'll turn on the light.
No.
What? But why not?
Well, I haven't been home all day. I'm dirty and tired, and I'd rather you didn't see me when I'm not looking my best.
Oh, really, Mr. Johnson? But all right, I'll let you have your way this once.
Are you alone here?
Yes.
You expecting anyone?
No, not tonight. Nancy had a date with her boyfriend, and Max has gone home to his family.
Well, what are you doing working here so late?
Oh, trying to catch up on my paperwork. Mr. Johnson, are you hungry?
What?
Have you had anything to eat?
Well, no, why?
Because I'm starved. I had Miss Wassell go down to the delicatessen for a couple of sandwiches this afternoon, and I thought you might like to share them with me. I hate eating by myself. Would you like one?
Sure.
Oh, good. They're here in the display case. It makes a wonderful refrigerator, too. See, there's a chicken and a ham. Which do you want?
Oh, I don't know. Ham's okay.
Well, here we are. And I think... let me see. Yes, this one's ham.
Thanks.
We can sit right down at this table.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you.
Oh, I almost forgot something to drink. We've had iced tea in these glasses, but they're clean. Hey, would you hold it while I pour the milk?
Oh, sure.
Thanks. It's perfectly fresh. Nancy brought it back with the sandwiches. Well, now then. Is it good?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad you could stop by. I do hate eating alone.
Yeah, me too. Mmm, that milk's nice and cold. You have any unusual visitors here today?
Unusual visitors? No.
You sure?
Quite sure, Mr. Johnson. Why?
Oh, I just wondered. A couple of funny things happened today. I didn't go home on account of...
Well, what's the matter, Mr. Johnson?
I thought you were hungry.
Why, I am.
You're not eating.
Oh, I will. It's just that... Well, it isn't often that I get to eat with a gentleman. I enjoy watching you.
You lead a pretty dull life here, don't you?
Oh, I suppose, by some standards.
Seems to me you really don't have much to live for.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that.
Oh.
Mr. John, are you all right?
Yeah. Just a little cramp.
Well, you're probably eating too fast. You see, a person goes a while without eating, and then they gulp their food down. It isn't good for you.
It isn't from...
Oh, you poor man. Here, take another swallow of milk.
I can't.
Mr. Johnson, what is it?
I don't know.
Don't you? Well, I do.
What?
I lied to you. The milk is fresh, but it didn't come from the delicatessen.
What are you talking about?
It came from my apartment. It was the milk that was delivered this morning.
No. No. You're lying.
Am I, Mr. Owen?
I'll kill you. Help me. Please. Call an ambulance. Please call an ambulance.
No.
Please.
You made a fool of me, Mr. Owens. You looked at me like you thought I was beautiful. And I believed it. That was only one of the things you did.
Please!
This morning, did you help my cat? Would you have helped me or my sister?
I'm sorry.
Oh, of course you are.
But you wouldn't be if the police hadn't compared the rose I gave one of their men with those found in that girl's apartment. They could tell from the wiring. I wire all of my roses identically. They told me to call them if you came back.
Help me. Please help me.
Mr. Owens? Mr. Owens? Lieutenant Carver? Lieutenant, this is Miss Craig at the flower shop.
Suspense. In which Paula Winslow starred in tonight's presentation of The Twelfth Rose. Next week, the story of a hired killer who had a deadline to meet. We call it A Matter of Timing. That's next week on Suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 5th, 1956 on CBS, wrapping up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.